chapter 4 and 5 of the book of Numbers. All right? There's a couple of things. Numbers 4 are not that difficult to go through. It just shows more of details of the Levites.
Numbers 4. The Lord spoke to Moshe and Aharon, saying, "Take a census of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi, by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, all who can come on duty to do the work in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. When the camp is to set out, Aharon and his sons shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. Then they shall put on it the covering of goatskin and spread on top of that a cloth all of blue and shall put in its poles. And over the table of the bread of the presence they shall spread a cloth of blue and put on it the plates and dishes for incense, the bowls and the flagons for the drink offering, and the regular showbread also shall be on it. Then they shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet and cover the same with a covering of goatskin and shall put it in its poles. And they shall take a cloth of blue and cover the lampstand for the light with its lamps, its tongs, its trays, and all the vessels for oil with which it is supplied. And they shall put it with all its utensils in a covering of goatskin and put it on the carrying frame. And over the golden altar they shall spread a cloth of blue and cover with a covering of goatskin and shall put in its poles. And they shall take all the vessels of the service that are used in the sanctuary and put them in a cloth of blue and cover them with a covering of goatskin and put them on the covering frame. And they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth on it. And they shall put on it all the utensils of the altar, which are used for the service there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, and the basins, all the utensils of the altar. And they shall spread on it a covering of goatskin, and shall put in its poles. And when Aharon and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary, as the camp sets out, after the sons of Kohath shall come to carry these, but they shall not touch the holy things, lest they die. These are the things of the tent of meeting that the sons of Kohath are to carry. And Eleazar, the son of Aharon, the priest, shall have charge of the oil for the light, the fragrant incense, the regular grain offering, and the anointing oil, with all the oversight of the whole tabernacle and all that's in it of the sanctuary and its vessels. The Lord spoke to Moshe and Aharon, saying, "Let not the tribe of the clans of the Kohathites be destroyed from among the Levites, but deal thus with them, that they may live and not die when they come near the most holy things. Aharon and his son shall go in and appoint them, each to his task and to his burden. But they shall not go in to look on the holy things, even for a moment, lest they die." The Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Take a census of the sons of Gershon, also by their fathers' houses and by their clans, from 30 years old up to 50 years old. You shall list them, all who can come to do duty, to do service in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the clans of the Gershonites, in serving and bearing burdens. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and the tent of meeting with its coverings and on the covering of goatskin that is on top of it and the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting and the hangings of the court and the screen for the entrance of the gate of the court that is around the tabernacle and the altar and their cords and all the equipment for their service. And they shall do all that needs to be done with regard to them. All the service of the sons of the Gershonites shall be at the command of Aharon and his sons, in that they are to carry, and in all that they are to have to do. And you shall assign to their charge all that they are to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting, and their guard duty is to be under the direction of Itamar, the son of Aharon the priest." As for the sons of Merari, you shall list them by their clans in their fathers' houses. From 30 years old up to 50 years old, you shall list them. Everyone who can come on duty to do the service of the tent of meeting. And this is what they are charged to carry as the whole of their service in the tent of meeting. The frames of the tabernacle with its bars and pillars and bases, and the pillars around the courts with their bases, pegs, and cords with all their equipment and all their accessories. And you shall list by name the objects that they are required to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of Merari, the whole of their service in the tent of meeting, under the direction of Itamar, the son of Aharon the priest. And Moshe and Aharon and the chiefs of the congregation listed the sons of the Kohenites, the Kohathites, by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting. And those listed by their clans were 2,750. This was the list of the clans of the Kohathites, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moshe and Aharon listed according to the commandment of the Lord by Moshe. Those listed of the sons of Gershon by their clans and their fathers' houses from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting, those listed by their clans and their fathers' houses were 2,630. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Gershon, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moshe and Aharon listed according to the commandment of the Lord. Those listed of the clans of the sons of Merari by their clans and their fathers' houses from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting, those listed by clans were 3,200. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Merari, whom Moshe and Aharon listed according to the commandment of the Lord by Moshe. All those who were listed of the Levites, whom Moshe and Aharon and the sons and the chiefs of Israel listed by their clans and their fathers' houses from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come to do the service of the ministry and the service of bearing burdens in the tent of meeting, those listed were 8,580. According to the commandment of the Lord through Moshe, they were listed, each one with his task of serving or carrying. Thus they were listed by him as the Lord commanded Moshe. Numbers 5. The Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, command the people of Israel that they put out of the camp everyone who is leprous or has a discharge, and everyone who is unclean through contact with the dead. You shall put out both male and female, putting them outside the camp, that they may not defile their camp in the midst of which I dwell. And the people of Israel did so, and put them outside the camp, as the Lord said to Moshe. So the people of Israel did. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel. When a man or a woman commits any of the sins that people commit by breaking faith with the Lord, and that person realizes his guilt, he shall confess his sin that he has committed, and he shall make full restitution for his wrong, adding a fifth to it and giving it to him to whom he did the wrong. But if the man has no next of kin to whom restitution may be for the wrong, the restitution for wrong shall go to the Lord for the priest, in addition to the ram of atonement, with which atonement is made for him. And every contribution, all the donations of the people of Israel which they bring to the priest, shall be his. Each one shall keep his holy donations. Whatever anyone gives to the priest shall be his. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel. If any man's wife goes astray and breaks faith with him, if a man lies with her sexually, and it is hidden from the eyes of her husband, and she is undetected, though she has defiled herself, and there is no witness against her, since she is not taken in the act, and if the spirit of jealousy comes over him, and he is jealous of the wife who has defiled herself, or if the spirit of jealousy comes over him and he is jealous of his wife, though she has not defiled herself, Then the man shall bring his wife to the priest, and shall bring the offering required of her, a tenth of an ephah of barley flour. He shall pour no oil on it, and put no frankincense on it, for it is the grain offering of jealousy, a grain offering of remembrance, bringing iniquity to remembrance. And the priest shall bring her near, and set her before the Lord. And the priest shall take holy water in an earthenware vessel, and take some of the dust that is on the floor of the tabernacle, and put it into the water. And the priest shall set the woman before the Lord, and unbind the hair of her, the woman's head, and place in her hands the grain offering of remembrance, which is the grain offering of jealousy. And in his hand the priest shall have the water of bitterness that brings the curse. Then the priest shall make her take an oath, saying, if no man is lain with you, and if you have not turned aside to uncleanness while you were under your husband's authority, be free from this water of bitterness that brings the curse. But if you have gone astray, though you are under your husband's authority, and if you have defiled yourself, and some man other than your husband is lain with you, then let the priest take the oath of the curse, and say to the woman, the Lord make you a curse and an oath among your people, when the Lord makes your thigh fall away and your body swell. May this water that brings the curse pass into your bowels and make your womb swell and your thigh fall away. And the woman shall say, Amen, Amen. Then the priest shall write these curses in a book and wash them off into the water of bitterness. And he shall make the woman drink the water of bitterness that brings the curse. And the water that brings the curse shall enter into her and cause bitter pain. And the priest shall take the grain offering of jealousy out of the woman's hand, and shall wave the grain offering before the Lord and bring it to the altar. And the priest shall take a handful of the grain offering as its memorial portion and burn it on the altar, and afterward shall make the woman drink the water. And when he has made her drink the water, then if she has defiled herself and has broken faith with her husband, the water that brings the curse shall enter into her and cause bitter pain, and her womb shall swell and her thigh shall fall away, and the woman shall become a curse among her people. But if the woman has not defiled herself and is clean, then she shall be free and shall conceive children. This is the law in cases of jealousy, when a wife, though under her husband's authority, goes astray and defiles herself, or when the spirit of jealousy comes over a man and he is jealous of his wife. Then he shall set the woman before the Lord, and the priest shall carry out for her all this law. The woman shall be free from iniquity, but the woman shall bear the man shall be free from iniquity, but the woman shall bear her iniquity.
Any obvious thoughts?
So what? If she's innocent, none of these things are going to happen to her.
Oh, okay, and then we're talking the fifth chapter, correct. We'll talk more in detail about that. Anything else? Nothing unusual about this, these two chapters? Probably not. The what?
Read it already.
You read it already? Did we read this last week? Not in extreme detail, because this issue is about whom in the fourth chapter? It's the functions of the Levites, not the people of Israel, just the Levites. Remember we chapter 1 and chapter 2, chapter 3, now yes.
Did they scrape the filthy floor that they're doing all their killing of animals and stuff and put it in that
water?
Oh,
that's their job, that's the function, yes, they have to do that job.
No, I'm asking, do they pull the nastiness off the floor from all their slaughterings and stuff?
We're talking the tabernacle with dirt in the ground.
Oh.
All right. I'm sorry, what?
Blood is sacred.
Blood is the only, yeah. Remember, we went into detail about how they clean the animal before it's burnt. They cut the blood, they save the blood, but they clean the animal, take the skin off the animal, and head off the camel, do all that kind of stuff. And they get rid of the interns, get rid of, clean up the stuff. Then they do it on the altar. Okay? It's not the whole thing, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, except for rare cases. All right. Now we're seeing here, I said that the fourth chapter is not too difficult. It seems, okay, so what, boring. But we're talking about the function of the Levite. Now last week I talked about the function of the Levite, and I told you what Levi means. Do you remember what Levi means?
Join.
The what? To join to, or to be connected to. And he said, Yahshua said to Moses, give them to the high priest. So now they are the ones who carry out the functions, the physical functions of doing something called at what place? At what place?
Place of meeting.
Place of meeting, right. Or the place of appointment. Remember I told you when it says the word yes. When I said the word, it says tabernacle or congregation. Now congregation in Hebrew means moed. The place of, and tabernacle means the place of dwelling. I mean God's dwelling there. And it's the moed. It's a point of a place of appointment. So you go to God to find out what your job is, basically. Yes. Kelly?
Yeah, it's not a good time. At first reading of this, my reaction is, oh, well, so she gets in big trouble, but if the guy is off chasing girls, then he doesn't. Now, that's my first carnal reaction.
You're talking about the fifth chapter.
Yes. Now, my second reaction to that is, if a woman is accused, he has her covered. She has a proof that she is innocent.
The very important phrase in the very first part of that book we will cover, chapter we'll cover in a minute. But here, what's important here is that there, and what God is showing us at this particular point in the fourth chapter is that when they are to move, right, remember the cloud rises up, and guess who starts the work? Actually, it's Eleazar. The office of Eleazar goes in and he does something. The very first function that takes place is that Eleazar, who's supposed to go in there and make sure something takes place. Although it says later on in the chapter, the office of Eleazar, verse 16. Now, what does Eleazar mean? God has helped. All right? God has helped. God has helped. Who's he helping? Who's Eleazar helping? Okay. What he's doing is functioning, and what he must do is do an awful lot of things. All right. And he is the son of the light bringer. Remember, Aaron means the light bringer. Aaron represents, remember, the Messiah, the high priest, your high priest, my high priest, the light bringer. And we know this from the book of John, says he is the light. He's the one that brings forth the light. And we know in Revelation, he's the one that lights the candles. No one else does, or lights the parts. And so we're seeing here the function and office of somebody is needing help. So God brings in somebody to help the high priest. Basically, that's what the nutshell means, okay? Eleazar is one of the most famous priests that you have written in the book. Son of Aaron, okay? God has helped. Okay, now remember the function of this is not to protect the tabernacle here. The function for the Levites is to do something, but first must something be done. What verse 16? He says, now the priest, the oil of the light, he needs to hang on to that, and the sweet incense, the daily menhach offering, that's the grain offering, all right, and the anointing oil, and oversight, he must be the Eliezer's office. He had people working for him, by the way. Over the office, he had sons and daughters, sons that work with him, and all that's therein, the sanctuary and all the vessel. So first thing that has to be done when the, quote, cloud moves or rises up is Eleazar goes in and takes care of those particular things so that who will not get killed? The very next group that goes in. Now, what's interesting, he said, because this second group, or the first group called the assembly, comes in and they do something. Now they are on the south side. They're on the south side. Eleazar is on the east side, right? So Eleazar, although the entryway is on the west side, he'd have to come all around the front side, west side, and go inside and do his job and all the other that he had working with him. They were not Levites. They were of the high priest or the sons of Aaron, relatives of his grandsons and everything else. And here now, this man here, he goes in, this particular sons of Korach, meaning the assembly, and the sons of to join with their families. And on the south side of the tabernacle. So he goes in, he does his job, the Levite does, not after Aaron's done what he's done. Now they must come in, they must do certain things. Now find it interesting here. This is interesting here. Now the first thing they do, verse 5, is they are to take something down. Take the veil down of that was covering of the Holy of Holies. Now, so the inside's already been covered up by Eleazar. It's already been covered up and protected, so they won't have this Levite, this tribe of Levite, this family of Levite here, would not have to touch those things, which is the death sentence. It's a pretty risky job, don't you think? So, but these men looks like they were, you know, God, oh, you're going to kill them if you touch them. No, he's really giving them the most important function of moving. They are to go in there and they are to do something. They are to take the veil, the covering of the ark of, what's the covering of the ark with testimony, remember? What's the cover? The mercy seat. All right? The mercy seat. It's already been covered now. And they're supposed to put another covering of fine. Now, it says badger skin, some of your relations. You can't find it in written in Hebrew. It's not there. It's just sin literally means fine linen. It wasn't like rough cowhide like we have out here in the West and, you know, big, huge cowboy boots, not that kind. It was very soft and flexible and easy to work with. Like you, when you go buy something like a leather jacket or something like that, nice and soft, it's leather, but it's refined. It's made perfect. It's got skin down, made thin, and probably more from, Richard Age's personal thinking, it probably was from a goat, possibly from a lamb, but those are soft-skinned animals. Yes. Yours says seal skin. Yeah. Now, that odd thing about it, they're in the desert. We're out there in the desert, right? And the only water they got was from, we struck the stone, and out comes this water for them to drink and to wash their clothes and eat with. I don't think seals came out. My personal opinion, right? The blue is okay. I read this also in the study that the skin was probably blue in color, like what the author was saying, like the skin of a dolphin, which is light blue. Sorry, what? Or porpoise, whatever. It's Saints family. But that's just the terminology. Now, blue is a very important color for God. All right, we're seeing that after he does that, he's to cover with fine linen and then cover that with blue cloth or blue linen, basically. So we had the blue linen went over on top. After the high priest did all the covering they were supposed to do, now here comes this tribe, this section of the family of Levi. He comes in and he covers it up with leather and covers up the whole thing first with the veil. Then he covers that up with the fine linen. Then he covers that up with blue. Probably a bit of layer, don't you think? And we go through there. Now it's also the showbread. And what does he do there? He covers the showbread with blue linen. And also the dishes and the spoons and the bowls and all those associated with covers to cover everything up with blue cloth or blue linen. And then he takes that, and he spreads upon all that now a cloth of scarlet, red. So now we have a covered blue, and now we have a covered with red. All right? Now it sounds boring, doesn't it?
No.
Are you sure? All right, let's continue on then with this boring subject matter, right? Yes, go ahead.
So does the blue mean Messiah and the red his blood? Is it supposed to mean that?
All right.
I'm just asking.
What does the leather represent?
Well, you told us to change.
The final covering is with this particular section now. The only thing that's covered red now is what?
Showbread.
Yeah, the showbread, the dishes, the spoons, the bowls, and the ceremonial bread, which is on it. So now we're talking about just the table. It's a very small table there. All right. And it's covered with linen, with fine leather and with cloth of blue. And so is the showbread. And that's a very important thing. So the showbread is a very important thing. We won't talk about that today. We talked about that several months ago. I don't want to go back through that again. So we see a pattern here. In verse 9, they take this blue cloth and they cover the candlestick. We'll go through the candlestick in more detail later. Now listen very what it says here. They cover the candlestick and the lamp and the thongs and the dishes and the vessels. So what do you think about the menorah? Is it made up of one piece? That's not what it says. Remember Daniel gave us a thing about how they had a cup, the bowls, the knobs? Those are all made out of gold. Individually made out of gold, and they're attached together, and there's a hollow spot down through the whole thing, in order that oil will travel up and go through, and they could light what's called the lamp. The lamp is not the whole thing. The lamp is what? The what? Now you light, and the lamp now has light. What was behind the light? No. It was a certain design of a certain flower.
Oh, the almond.
The almond blossom. That's what's called the lamp. There's a lamp stick. So that means a holder that's holding the lamp. You understand what I'm saying? And then there's those knobs in between, or they call them thongs and everything else. And all the dishes, there was a dish on each one of those sections. And the dishes was put into oil, was put in those dishes. And it was the function of the high priest to make sure there was a lot of oil in order for it to be soaked up by and through the quote wick. And then the light would be up there. The lamps would be on. When you go to your own house, do you have lamps in your house? Now, without the bulb sitting into a little cubby hole, there is no lamp. There is no light. So that's what you have the kind of picture when it talks about the word lamp. Or I should say, the word lamp. Candlestick holder is what it is. It holds the lamps. And so now we have to look at it. We have to say, okay, what does that mean for us? If we are lights unto the world, what are we then? We're lamps. Now God lights us so light goes out. We are kind of like a lamp. Each one of us is like a lamp. Now what was the function of the menorah in the tabernacle? To give light outwardly. It didn't shoot up straight like we have our little candle things here. It was not up straight. It was aimed toward, when the light was lit, the reflection of the gold was on the whole tabernacle. Now, what kind of gold it was, I do not know. It could have been white gold or gold. I do not know. I wasn't there. They didn't explain. Didn't talk into it. I don't know what kind of gold was in that territory or what kind of gold actually was in Egypt during that time. So I don't know. Different people have a different taste in different kind of gold. Some people like gold. Some people like dark gold. So it's combinable or blendable. I don't think so. But anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, anyway. We go on, and not what we're supposed to do with that one. Then they cover it with what? After you do the blue cloth, and then they shall put in all the vessels that they had for the lamp were to be covered with fine linen. Fine leather. And verse 11, we go on. We're going through this real fast. It's not that it's not important. The golden altar. Remember, what was the golden altar? Where was it located at? It's a real small, little golden altar. Where was it located at? Next to the Holy of Holies as he entered it. What was on it? I'm sorry, what?
Incense.
Incense ready to be burned. They had four corners on it, remember? And so at every time when the Day of Atonement comes, lo and behold, the priest had to put light that on the golden lamps, on the golden table for that only. And so now that was covered. So all these things that we know, we've heard about, read about some few months ago, several months ago, in fact. And then, of course, again, the golden altar covered with blue, and then they covered with fine leather. Just the opposite. Sometimes it's leather, then it's the white, then it's the blue, and then it's the leather. Depends upon. I don't have an answer for all that. I'm just saying it's there. Yes. But she may have an answer.
I just think of it as color coding. Because certain items had to go in the most holy place, and they were covered in a different order with different colors than the stuff that was in the holy place and whatnot, to color code those things so the Kohathites could go in and just park the stuff down, you know, in some kind of spot, and then the sons of Aaron later on would go in and actually uncover it and make sure everything went in the right place. But it had to be color coded, because once it's covered, you don't know what's there, but you have to know where it goes.
Yeah.
Just like with Jeff with these cords, you know, they're color coded.
That's right.
So even if you don't know why they go where they go,
you know
where to put it, even if you don't know why you're putting it there. And so with the Kohathites, it's the same way to some degree. They're color coded. They might not know what they're carrying, but they know that it's color coded. They know it needs to go to a certain place. And so they do their job. They put it in that place, and then they could just walk away.
And so, what? Just, I'm sorry, what'd you say? I'm going to get to a point on this section of the Levitical family toward the end. It's almost at the end. For something very special is given to them. And it's very interesting to look at these men. Later on, we have the number to tell you how big you are. And of course, they had the vessel, responsible for the vessel, responsible for this incense, and the incense itself, the burner that is, and the fish, called it fish hooks, and all the other shovels, that everything do with the high priest had to do, relationship to the Holy of Holies. Relationship to the Holy of Holies, not to anything else. Oh, I should be on the altar, the other altar that they burnt things with. And now we come to this point where here the Kohathites were given a most important job. Of all of the three families, one of them was given the most important job. And that is to take God's blessings, the gold, his gold things, and take them out and to carry them. Carry them. Now they had an awful lot of, they had about 2,000, 3,000 men from the age of 30 to 50 to be able to carry their stuff. So it wasn't like one man had to do the whole thing. They had also wagons. They had things they could carry things in and transport them things. The only thing that was not to be carried in a wagon was what? The what? The Ark of the Covenant, because inside of it was had something very special. What was inside of it? The Ten Commandments, all right? Or called the testimony. It's the witness of something. The Ten Commandments is the witness against something, not for something. Ten Commandments is what? If you do those things, what is the commandment telling you to do? Die. Now, it's something that covers up that death. It's called the mercy seat, covers up the death. We went through that before. We have to kind of keep that in mind as these guys are moving these most precious things, most valuable things, first, from when God is ready to move. Move those things first that is most holy to me. Those things are the most important aspects that God has. But one interesting one is the showbread, the only one that gets a cloth of scarlet. Do you think that's fascinating? Go ahead.
I think if Messiah said he is the bread and that we would eat of him, and I would think that that would be the blood, right?
You're getting close.
Okay.
You're getting good. It's a picture of something, okay? The last thing that's there is covering up is my. And then there's a fine covering of leather over that. Fascinating. That's the only thing that's covered with scarlet. It's the bread. The minhach. How much was the high priest to offer on the fire. How much? A what? How much? One handful mixed with frankincense and oil, and then he dumps it on the fire. That turns to what's called a holah, going up to God. It has to be unleavened, right? So God takes a portion, not all of the unleavened bread. He doesn't take it all. He only takes a handful. Now, back to the original statement, during the days of unleavened bread. What is it representing? Yes.
A sinless Messiah?
You are already unleavened because Yeshua was your Passover. So what do you think the rest of the Menahah offering was? It was the ones that are now what?
Unleavened.
They live in purity, in truth, and in honesty before the living God. Do you understand what I'm saying? Maybe I'm way off on a tangent. I talked to you about what's called the firstborn 2-3 weeks ago, and a picturing of the leavened bread, unleavened bread, rather. I know I talk about the leavened bread. I say, oh yeah, right. We always talk negatively. Like, we always talk negative, always find something bad. I want to talk about something not bad. I want to talk about something wonderful. And so that's why it's only one handful. The first one goes where? Up. Just a portion of, let's put it this way, the ecclesia. Or I would say, the people that God is drawing unto himself. Simple as that. Now, it's just a way of thinking. Don't have a degree, but that's how I look at things. Anyway, so we go on now to the next guy who was the one who was responsible for the next family was whom? Gershon. Oh, I want to make something I didn't mention there. The man who was in charge of the south of the Levites was whom? Chief of the south side is Elzaphon. Meaning, by God has protected. Now, the one who's responsible to make sure everything is covered up exactly according to what Moses was told by God, how to cover these things up, that guy was responsible to making sure it was done. And interesting name means, my God has protected. Protected what? Protected those things that are holy unto him. And don't think it's a coincidence, right? I find that fascinating. And the next time we have is a person that's on Goshen. He's on what side? He's on what? West side. He's on the west side. Now, after these guys from the south do their job and they have taken out the objects, now the people on the west side go in and they do something. Remember, the high priest, one of the members of the high priest, is all responsible for each one of these functions. Self-explanatory. And go ahead and go through there. We see verse 25. And they shall bear the curtains of the tabernacle. Now, this is very fascinating. Remember the curtains? Doors are drab, olive brown, you know, marine color look stuff. What were they like? They were so outstandingly beautiful, you can't even describe them that well. And they had an image upon them. What was the image on it? Cherubim. Cherubim. Cherubim was on the outside of each one of those curtains. And it's on both sides. The curtain actually hang over both sides of the the wood frame, both inside and outside. Two different sets of curtains, however. One's on the outside, one's on the inside. We have here now, these will take away the curtains of the tabernacle, and the covering of, to cover them with fine leather, the hangings of the door of the tabernacle, that means the first entrance way. Remember, the big tabernacle, they had a doorway, a curtain, basically, and you had to go around the side to get in. Now, they take that down. That's their job. They take just the cloth down. They take the curtains down. And the next job they do, and the hangings of the court. Remember, there are four courts. We went through that before. The four courts are inside of the tabernacle. Each one of those courts had hangings on them. Each one of those courts had frames about them. And so each court represented certain positions, north, south, east, and west. All right? And inside of that, we think of the, sometimes we look at the curtain, we look at the tabernacle, all we see is the outer perimeters. We never pay attention to what was inside of it, except that one called the Holy of Holies. Awful lot. Well, once in a while, remember the golden lampstand? Okay, we got that. We don't remember the courts. There were four of them in there, and they were set inside of that tabernacle, the bigger one. All right, so we got that picture, though we don't see them. We no one drew an image of it, so we don't have that in our mind. And so he was to take the hangings of the courts and the hangings of the door and the hangings and all the instruments, all the things associated with them, basically. And that was their job. Now, in the verse 25, in some of your translations, they have another word there. All right, and it says there, and the curtains and the latter part of this is covering of the fine leather, and above it was the hanging of the door of the tabernacle. That word, covering of fine leather in verse 25, Jeff didn't read that. Did you notice it? He didn't. You didn't. What did he call it? What did he say? He read it because in Exodus, it's called goat's hair. I don't have an answer why they said, quote, badger or any other kind of thing. But there is a little bit of confusion because in Exodus, it's called goat's hair. Where was that goat's hair covering over? What was it covered over? It covered what? The Holy of Holies. Covering over the Holy of Holies. What was so unique when we looked at that before in the past about goat's hair? What's so fascinating about goat's hair? Ellie, tell them.
Israel. In the summer, the hairs tighten and let air come and go through. In the winter, when it rains, it swells and it becomes waterproof.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fascinating about goat's hair. You know, I think maybe I got it wrong. Some prophet somewhere wore some kind of what garment? Goat? Oh well, coincidental, right? He probably wore the right kind of clothes. When it rains, he's covered up. When it's hot, it opens up. I thought that was kind of funny. So anyway, the next guy is Ithamar. And basically his main name has associated with palm trees. That's what he's next. And he is on the north side. And the man in charge of that, Zuriel, is my rock is scarred. That's is God. It's all it boils down to. What was their job? They were to take the boards down. Remember the boards? Not just the boards, the tabernacle. But also the bars. Now there's a bar that held all the pieces of boards, called boards, panels, all together. There was a hole right down the center of them, and a bar would feet down and connect them all together. And so all the bars also, they were responsible taking care of them. And they, remember, this is the last in the series. So God first did what? Take those things that are holy first, then take the curtains down. I take care of them. Now, take the wood down. Of course, when they had to go to the new campsite, guess who got started first? The other way around. Okay? So God was what? God of chaos or well-organized? Okay. He's also well-organized within the body of Christ. He really runs everything. And that's what I tell people, that if God has placed you within the temple where you're supposed to be, don't leave. Stay and do the function that God has given you to do. Don't say, but I want to move the golden altar. No. If you're supposed to take down the peg holes, take down the peg holes. Supposed to take down the curtain, take down the curtains. Okay? If you're supposed to go in and cover everything up before anybody else shows up, you're not a Levite. You're a member of the high priest, working directly for the Son of God. Sorry, what?
Just because the hand is not of the foot.
So you understand sometimes what Apostle Paul talks about, I guess, right? I guess he was smarter than you thought, right? And anyway, to get down to the bottom of all this, we're going to find out that each one of these families had a certain number of men, age of 30 and on. Later, sometime in the future, as we go farther into Book of Numbers, we're going to have comparison of why numbers, why number them? What's the purpose of numbering them? We will get to there later. It's much like when last week, I talked to you about the pattern how God works. Remember the firstborn? Now he exchanged the firstborn for the whole tribe of Levi. And sometimes it upset everybody. Well, no. That was his plan in the very beginning. That's how God thinks. That's how he is. And we talked about how many firstborns does God have. Oh, there's only one firstborn. Well, not according to biblically speaking, because God's speaking a lot further on down the future of everything. How many firstborns we did rattle off last time? Ephraim? Judah? Jacob himself? No, he was not listed in the firstborn. Well, God, who, remember when Rachel had kids? Which one did God pick? Did he pick the firstborn came out of the womb? No, he picked the second one, because that's the firstborn to God. That's the condition. God makes who is the firstborn and nobody else. We think it means firstborn in the flesh. Oh, that's true. A lot of people are firstborn in the flesh, but are they the firstborn? Is Abraham one of the firstborn? Yeah, God of the living, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob was not the firstborn. Isaac. They what? Because the old days always firstborn of the father, not the mother. It's only modern times we reverse that. And so it is. We have to say, okay, what does it mean? What is the first fruits? And the Apostle Paul writes, and so does James. We are a type of first fruits. I mean, what? We're 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years too late. No, you're still part of the first fruit. That's how God counts first fruit. It's different than how we count first fruit. All right? And so you have to kind of remember that. Okay, chapter 5. That's a heavy chapter, right? What? Now we'll talk about it. Okay, ladies. We heard some of you talk. Is this fair or not fair? Be honest with yourself inside. How come she has to go through this and he doesn't, and he gets off scot-free, right? What does that mean? Go ahead.
Because it is a protection for an innocent woman.
Okay.
I was also wondering if this guy is a jealous type and he keeps bringing his wife forward, do the priests say, hey, come on. You know what? Because sometimes men are like that, and I don't mean that really toward men, but there are some men that are continuously jealous.
We'll talk about those words. Anybody else got a statement? Okay, we're going way over here.
Well, I think because Adam was made in the image of God, and Eve was out of Adam.
All right.
So the order is the thing.
Okay, let's go rush into this chapter 5 relatively quick and fast. It's not really something you have not heard before from the book of Exodus. But God says something, who's got a discharge, and they're unclean. What are they supposed to do with them? Take them outside of camp. And how long are they supposed to stay out of camp? Forever? For 7 days. And then another 7 days, up to 21 days maximum. You know, that's the normal time that required when you ever catch a disease. You're supposed to wait for 21 days. Coincidental, of course, right? 7 weeks, 3 weeks. Yeah, just coincidental. Anyway, God had that in mind. When you got a real bad sickness, quarantine yourself for 3 weeks. That's okay. So that's what you have to do. Anyway, we go through here. And an interesting thing that when someone's done something wrong to somebody else, I find this very fascinating. Verse 5. He said, and Yahshua said to Moses, and tell them, if a man or a woman commits any sin that men commit in unfaithfulness against Yahuwah, that person is guilty. When he has confessed his sin, which he has committed, he shall make restitution for his trespass in full, plus one-fifth of it, and give it to me. No! Give it to the one you offended. God, victim first. The victim gets restitution first. God did not claim anything after that. If the victim gets the restitution, God did not require anything except the sin offering this man must do, or this woman must do, man or woman, must do that before God, because now you offended God. Now God wants the offense, but he didn't require 20% on for himself. He required 20% of the person you just offended. Don't you think that's fascinating? This is not about our thing, it's about how God works. In our country, of course, in most countries around the world, they don't think that way at all. The victim is like, what's the buyer beware? That's our motto, buyer. Well, you bought it, you're a fool. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Okay, no. Restitution. God requires restitution. Even a simple thing you might think about, how unimportant it is. Did damage to somebody and didn't mean to do, or you did mean to do it, and then you were caught. Hope you wouldn't get caught, but you got caught. Guess what? 20%. You pay it. If you confront it quickly and fast, you don't have to pay the 20%. Turn around and get the thing done, get it over with, and say goodbye. Okay? Get it over with. And of course, if there is no relative, nobody, if there is no relatives to this person who was the victim, that got, we'll talk about like death. Okay, and then no relatives, guess who gets it? The high priest. The high priest gets it. The Son of God gets it. What do you think the Son of God is going to do with it? He's either going to keep a record of it or cover it up. That's his choice, right? Now let's go into, quickly, we're going to go now to verse 11. Since it was already written, he went into detail of all these kind of things. It's kind of like hard to go through it again. But I'm not going to go through every word. I'm just going to raise a very important phrase. Speak to the children of Israel, verse 12, and say to them, where was I at? If any, something's going wrong here, Jeff. I'm getting really weird sounds. It's like a motorcycle running constantly. Now he's speeding up. It's still there. Why don't you turn me off? I'm going to hear all that motorcycle thing going. Thank you. Now you'll have to speak loud because I can't hear you. If any man's wife, we're talking the wife, not the man, goes astray and behaves unfaithfully toward her husband, and the man lies with her, and a man lies with her cardinally, and it is open and seen and hidden, not seen from the eyes of her husband, and it is concealed, cover up, that she has defiled herself, and there was no witness against her, nor was she ever caught. She got away with it. Now, this is a situation that's being presented here in the book of Numbers, and it's not talk about women. Talk about a certain women who do certain things. Now, that's an offense to God. Who is the witness to it all? Now we're going to go find out how he finds out. And then he says, well, what are you, for sure your sins will find you out? Guess who, if you cover it up, no one knows, guess who's going to expose it? This is what this should terrify anybody for. Now, in relationship to Yeshua and the church, we'll get to that a little later, the church, the body, the assembly of God cannot get away with something and say, no one saw me. Guess who is the witness? Not only is God the witness, even the Son of God is witness. Got two against you automatically. Now, we'll get to that a little later. So we're looking at something now, and something, the man finds something is unusual about this one. That word jealousy is not a proper word in Hebrew. It's the word zeal. I have a zeal for God. I have a zeal for the house of God. Now, what does that mean? That can be positive or negative. It means full fury, full of it. Now, this particular time, he is something fishy. Something's not right. He knows it. And we call it jealousy. Don't associate this zeal in relationship to human beings jealous about money, jealous about life, jealous about this house, jealous about Johnny got this, but I don't have that. I want Johnny's stuff. That's covetousness. It's not jealous or not jealousy. So here now, the man senses something is wrong. Don't answer this question. Oh, don't answer this question. I just want you to think about it. Many in this room know in your marriage something went wrong, but you can't prove it. Something is mysterious about it, but can't prove it, can't say anything. You know something is unstable. It doesn't seem like it once was. Something has caused a division. Something's caused inside of you. You begin to have all sorts of feelings of not jealousy, but anxiety, resentment, wonderment. What's going on? And this is what God is addressing here. How quote, earthy can God get then at this point? Now he has a problem. Now the guy says something is not right here. And the issue was this. Who has defiled herself, verse 14, but if the spirit of zealous comes upon him and becomes zealous of his wife, mad, angry, frustrated, whatever it is, okay, whatever it is, although she has not defiled him. Now here's a situation where now, what if he supposes it is, but it's not? God's got this covered, both fences, all right? At the end of this chapter, we'll find out who pays the consequences, all right? So we have here that there is something that says, and he must have, of course, certain things, okay, one-tenth of ephod, barley, very important. It's unleavened, and he shall pour on it, and this is the high priest, the man's to be, good to his wife, his priest, all these things he must bring. He, the man, must bring, he shall bring, not she, he shall bring, regarded for her, one-tenth of an ephod of barley, and he, the man, shall pour no oil on it, and put no frankincense on it, because it is a menhach of zealous, an offering of remembrance for bringing iniquity into remembrance. Did you notice that? Catch that? Did you notice this? The menhach offering, what's it for? To bring iniquity to remembrance. So in that menhach offering, a handful mixed with oil and frankincense is put upon the fire as to bring to God our remembrance. Doesn't sound right, does it? Doesn't sound like God, does it? Well, he will forget, like he said, under certain conditions. But we're not there yet. Not in the book of Numbers. Okay? Now the priest is to set her where? Before Yahuwah. What is it? What? He sets her near the Holy of Holies. Not in it, but near it. Now he has to do something. Okay, with all these things this their husband brought. And he shall take what's called holy water in an earthen vessel. That means sanctified water. What? Set aside for certain holy reasons, for certain cleansing reasons, for certain sanctification reasons. What was the water used for? What? Make sure the high priest's feet were washed and their hands were washed. That's the kind of water he's talking about. We're in the tabernacle. Okay. And an earthen vessel. And some dust on the floor, dirt upon the floor of the tabernacle, and put it in the water. Now it's unclean. Really? We'll find out. And the priest shall stand the woman before Yahuwah, and it says, uncovered. in so many translations, the woman's head. That means she had a covering, guess what, was opened up and taken off. So, you know, your head's not to be covered with any kind of cloth, with anything. Just take it off. You're standing before the creator of heaven and earth, uncovered, right? I know some men, it's a little hard to do that, but here in this case, no. You take it off and put the offering of remembrance in her hand, the menhach offering. That oil, and that, I mean the barley, menhach offering with oil and with frankincense. It's in her hand now. It didn't go in the fire. It's in her hand. Really interesting. Don't you think? It's a procedure. Trying to find out exactly what's the purpose behind it all. Right? It's the grain offering of zealousy. We shall put her under an oath. Here the high priest is telling to her, you must take this oath. And so she says, okay. If no man has laid with you, or if you have done any gone astray to uncleanness while under or with under your husband, or being your married your husband, and be free from the bitter, be free from the bitter water that brings a curse. So now this water is going to bring a curse. That's where we have. So we're talking about the law of what? Jealousy, or say zealousness of the man, not the woman. All right? We have to keep that sequence in the proper sequence. It's really gonna, the man's gonna have a problem if she's not guilty. He can never divorce her, ever. He can't give her a bill of divorce. She's stuck with her no matter what he thinks. Yes.
It is her also, because she's the one that her legs and arms fall off if she is guilty. So, I mean, it is their, that's.
It's how God reveals things that are hidden. Whether they're hidden is true or whether they're hidden is false, he brings it out. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's very important to how God works, how God plans to bring something that is hidden to the surface, whether it is true or whether it is a lie. Right? He does that. He is the one to reveal things, not you, not me, not mankind, but him. When something has been hidden, very important. This is not just about women, about men, about something much bigger. A whole lot bigger. We know about all this oath. We went through this part. And one would think that this would take one strong woman to do this. If she's innocent, is she a strong woman or is she a weak, feeble woman in cowardice?
She's strong. That very issue, if he had a doubt and was going to do this to her, she would remind him before he humiliated her public like this, are you sure you want to do this? Because so help me, you'll never be happy another day in your life.
We're going to go to God himself.
Yeah, so be
sure. We're
going to
go to God himself to solve this problem.
Yeah.
All right? And, of course, if she is, it's her problem. If she isn't, it's his problem. We don't think so. We only know the story, right? Don't have to go through all the details, because Jeff did a real good job on reading all that stuff. Now, we go here, verse 24. We're jumping really ahead real fast here now, because I only got to get past this chapter. And he shall make the woman, the high priest, shall make her drink the bitter water that brings forth a curse. And the water that brings forth a curse shall enter into her to become bitter. Every time the word used is bitter, in a lot of places, that means death. Or sickness all the way to the end of your life. What's it called? Terminal illness? A disease that stays forever? Doesn't go away? And Then the priest will take the grain offering of jealousy, or grain of zealousness, from the woman's hand, and shall wave that offering before Yahuwah, and bring it to the altar. So remember, it had to be in her hand. Now he takes it from her hand, the high priest takes it from her hand, and takes it in his hand, and he brings it before the altar. And then he's going to throw it in the fire. Because the men offering is one of the most important offerings. Every time you do an offering, you must have a men offering every single time. It's not separated. It's not all by itself. Now here. And what's going to happen to her? This is her belly, halfway through verse 7. Her belly will swell and her thigh will rot and the woman will become a curse among her people. My question is, why don't you just stone her? Why don't you stone her? Well, if she's cursed that way, why don't you stone her? If she gets sick that way, why don't you stone her?
Because that's what the neighboring countries would do. All the neighboring countries, Cain and everybody else, that's what they would do. Oh, I think you killed, you did, oh, I'll go ahead and kill you now and not to worry about it. That's the norm. So this is quite extremely different than what is normally done in their culture.
Now we'll get through this chapter real quick. I got something to finish in this chapter. And if the law, if she is what? If she did not defile, guess what happens? Verse 31. If she is innocent, what happens to him? What does it say? If she's guilty. What if she's not guilty? Does that automatically say he shall be free of any guilt if the woman is found not guilty? He is free? No, something's going to happen to him. He is not free. Put it in substitution. How could he be free if she is innocent of guilt? Who's guilty? Who brought forth the accusation? All right. When you bring forth an accusation, first part of this chapter said, what are you supposed to do? You have to redeem it. She gets something from it. And he has to pay it. Whatever the judges in the book of Leviticus or judges in Exodus, so whatever the judges decide what it is, that's what he must pay and 20% more. You know, so it may look like the guy got off scot-free. Not really, but I want to go some very interesting place. I'm going to change the whole subject matter. Turn around 180 degrees. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, but early in the morning, he came again to the temple. And all the people came to him. And he sat down and he taught. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought him a woman caught, not hidden, caught. What's supposed to happen to her? She's supposed to be stoned. Here in Numbers, if she is guilty, she doesn't get stoned. She just got a problem the rest of her entire life.
In that particular context, though, the man was also to be presented with her. She came alone. They tried to entrap him.
Don't. Okay, you get to technicalities one side or the other, Sean, and I don't care about that. I don't care what he said, what he was talking about. And he didn't say, the other guy's guilty and you're guilty. He didn't attack anybody. He just said, I'm saving you, lady. Don't worry about it. All right, the other guy didn't get caught. I don't care if he got caught. Because that's not the issue in John. That's not the subject matter in this book of chapter. But it's not about the guy who did it. It's her. Now, be honest with you and upright with it. And the numbers right here. If she is betraying her husband with another man and he does not know that she's married, who's guilty? The man who did not know or the man who knew? So we don't assume automatically the guy knew. Maybe he didn't. Just like this one does. She did it underhand. As if she did it hidden and no one knew about it, never brought to service. Not even the guy came forth and said she did it. No evidence. Now, in the same situation we got here in the book of John, on that issue about the guy It's about the subject matter. What did Yeshua do? Where are your accusers? They're all gone. From the oldest to the youngest. They've all disappeared. And he says, they're not there. And he said, neither do I accuse you or condemn you or judge you. But, don't do it again. Now this happened on the eighth day. During the days of Feast of Shavuot, this is on the eighth day. This took place on the eighth day. Very important time to know that that was the eighth day, or what's called Shemesheret. But we're not there yet. Now we have to come back to us as individuals. Are we, quote, the bride of the Messiah? Okay. What if we do something that we didn't get caught? What if we did something hidden and no one knew about it? No one was aware of it.
God knows.
And where is he going to take you? The high priest. He's going to take you to the high priest. Who is your high priest? Yeshua. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Yes.
I think from what I've seen and dealt with, there's a perspective that is lost. That is that point. Justice and mercy. We erase the justice, the J word, which means there is a penalty to be paid. And then mercy. It isn't just erase the disregard. There's a penalty, and then the forgiveness comes.
I want to bring a point which Daniel. No, I'm taking away Daniel's time. He's going to take away your time because he's going to keep on talking. I want to say something about the book of Revelation one more time. A lot of us think of what is in chapter 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. What about the first three chapters? Now, who was the first ones who were being judged? The church. And he said, the Spirit, listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches. Seven means what? The whole body, the whole complete thing. Every member around the world. Seven means it's a whole everybody. Now, when you read this thing, you got to say to yourself, okay, it's warning the church first. Then it tells what's going to happen to the world. Hey, you know, you better pay attention to what it says first. Pay very close attention to it, what it says first. Because that's the first message. Yes, there's hope in the final end, chapter 20 and 21. We know that. But what about you and me? What about the body of the Messiah around the world from ancient times to now? Do you think that the Son of God, and that's actually a message we read this thing, Yahshua is telling the message from his Father. His Father looks down and sees something, and we see, no, Father never sees bad thing. No, this is what the angel has had this report, because the Father on the throne told his Son, you tell that angel this. This is what I'm looking at. We think, oh no, God never sees those things. God is blind. God's unaware of what we do or what I do. It's always, oh, he's covered his eyes. He doesn't see nothing. He's kind of blind, deaf, and ignorant, right? Only his Son's got smarts, right? Now, Revelation here says it's the Father speaking here. It's not the Son of God speaking, only what? He said, if you have heard me say something, you know that my Father said the same thing. If I am judging you, O church, know that the Father also has judged you, O church. So when you read Revelations, which I'm not going to go into, I just want to bring these things out, because so many people are off on this thing about, oh, the end time, the end time, the end time. Why don't we pay attention to our time? Where we are at. And examine yourself. Hear what the Spirit of God says to the churches, the whole body. Pay attention to that one first. And then know he's still speaking in chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 6, all the way to chapter 21. But you better hear what the Spirit has to say. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want to go into the book of Revelation, I told you. But there's some things. This morning I woke up and the first thing went to my mind was, what? Revelations chapter 1, 2, and 3. Revelations chapter. Why is that in my brain for? I had to discipline myself to go and back to Numbers. I was so overwhelmed with that thought in my mind. I don't know why God put that in my mind, but it put it in my mind. Therefore, it stayed, and I knew I had to say something about it today. Because it's not about how well we understand the prophecy of Revelations. How accurate we are with this sign, that sign, the moon, the stars, the footprints, whatever it is. What a leopard is, what a cow, what a lion is, what a paw of a bear is, and all that kind of stuff. And these weird looking things that look like men, but they have long hair, and they're weird, you know. Look like women, but really, they got faces of men, but they got hair. Stupid things that we worry about. We pay attention first to what the Father is telling the body of his Son. And he says, I hate those deeds. You have some who do this. They're going to go. They're kicked out. They're finished. Goodbye. And that's how serious those we need to look at Revelations. Not about how, oh, we are in the health of how many centuries, every time it's ever came out, they thought the Roman Empire was the end of the time, end of the world, end of everything. And it didn't happen, of course. Then another empire came and said, oh, that's going to happen. Then it was Nazi Germany. Then it was Italy. Then it was Japan. Then it was, everybody got all their theories. Oh, that's it. That's it. That's it. Guess what? World War I was supposed to be the end of all wars, right? That's it. Messiah's going to come. It didn't happen. By the way, a lot of red moons all the place. You know, during our Civil War, there was a big battle. 75,000 men died. It was on a red moon day. Oh! Why didn't Jesus come? Sing, what's a battle in the Republic? Let's all sing Battle in the Republic. Right? He didn't come. All right. So when we look at Revelations, this is what gone through my mind, and this happened this morning, is read what it says to us first. Change our thinking. Change our ways. Change ourselves. Repeat ourselves. Come back to God. What is it you have in mind? What does he want me to do? It's there. It's written.